Thank you for joining us on this episode of Eminent Teachnology with Dr. Rochelle Newton and Drew Stennett, where we examine current and emerging technologies through the lens of diversity and equality.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to a new episode of Eminent Teachnology with Dr. Rochelle Newton and Drew Stennett. Today, we're going to talk about entertainment and technology, which, as you know, Rochelle, one of my favorite topics is entertainment because I love being entertained all the time, one way or another. Got to have that like input of happy things coming into the brain, hopefully happy things. Sometimes horror movies, which aren't always happy, but usually they got a pretty happy ending.
I'm going to send you tickets to the Prophet movie. I'm going to send you about 10 tickets so you can see it over and over again.
Oh, the Prophet? What is that one?
That's the remake of The Exorcist. Pope Exorcist, exactly. Pope Exorcist. I'm going to send you like 10 tickets so you can go see it over and over again.
I can't wait. It'll be amazing.
Or not.
We were just talking about if we're actually going to see that. And this is one of the few movies where I'm like, I don't know that I even want to see it. It looks so bad. And a movie's got to look bad for Drew not to want to see it.
I just can't imagine, you know, if you're going to make a remake, it seemed like the remake would be so much better than the older version. And it seems like they didn't put another time in this. This is just a thought. Let's just make one. And they just did it on the fly. Because it almost follows exactly the same model of the other one. And I've only read about it from what people have said. But that will be one that Rochelle will not see. I know Drew is going to tell me all about it.
Well, they are going to they're also doing an Exorcist television. I think it's a television show. They did years ago. And I think they're doing it again, which I think it'll probably be all right. We'll see.
So, Drew, I know you know everything about movies, and we're supposed to be talking about entertainment, so I think this still kind of qualifies. What's your top three horror movies? The top three.
Okay, top three horror movies. Number one would be Evil Dead 2.
Because... Never go see that.
It's great. And there's a new Evil Dead coming out in like 3 weeks. Rise of the Evil Dead. Evil Dead Rise. It's going to be like zombie apartments.
Scary.
But the reason I like Evil Dead 2, and I know this is not going to be all about movies, so I will get these out of the way real quick, is Evil Dead 1, great movie, made by amateur filmmakers, practical effects everywhere, made a ton of money. Evil Dead 2, they said, okay, now we've got a bunch of money, let's just make the same movie again, but do it better. And I thought they like really hit a peak right there when they did that. I will say number two, Hereditary, about that's a sort of recent movie about a family who has they're pretty much sacrificing one of their children to a demon. Great movie. So uncomfortable through the whole thing. Felt like I was sweating. Thought I might vomit at some point. It was just so gross. Like, loved it. And then we'll say number three. I'll do number three is a newer movie called X, which is about a gender swap version of Texas Chainsaw Massacre, where it is a
woman
group
with
of
the chains there.
Oh, but it's amazing. Like, it's a group of adult film actors start filming this movie at a remote like Texas cabin, and then murders start happening. And it is like, it's filmed beautifully. It's shot on digital, but it looks like a really well done movie from the like 70s or 80s. All the acting is great. Kid Cudi's in it. He's like hilarious and cool. There's a ton. It's just, I just love it. It was like one of my favorite movies of last year. So we'll say those are my top three.
So all of you listeners know this. Drew is a movie aficionado. I know he's going to make his own movie soon. I'm going to discourage him from making a horror movie because then I can't watch it. Make something I can watch.
We'll do a Rochelle cut, one that's not super scary, has like happier things in there.
I appreciate that. But you all out there in that entertainment space, you need to bring Drew into your movie making because he knows everything about technology and he loves scary movies, which means he understands all the intricacies of how to bring people in and storytelling together. So, Drew, I can't wait to your movie. Okay, so let's talk about entertainment and technology. And I know we border on these subjects a lot, you know, but we are technologists and we love our technology. So we want you to understand all the pros and cons of technology. So my first question comes about streaming. Mm-hmm. So when Netflix first came out, I believe they were alone in the streaming world. You can correct
Absolutely.
Me.
Absolutely.
And then slowly but surely, like I think HBO was next and then HBO Max, and you know, it kind of kept growing and growing. And so right now, I probably have 10 or 11 subscriptions.
Mm-hmm.
I only watch those subscriptions or those services when there's something on there that I want to see. So like Harry and his wife, I can't think of her name is right now, but that was really good entertainment to watch. You know, I love documentaries. So mm-hmm. we buy all these streaming services or pay for these streaming services every month that we don't well use. Where first describe to us what does that mean that it's a streaming service? And then why are there so many? And how do you secure them as an end user? So how do you protect your identity from, you know, them being having some kind of virus or being compromised in some way? So mm-hmm. what is it? Why are there so many, and how do you make it secure?
So the first question, what is it? That's probably the easiest one to answer. Like, and it's almost equitable to or equatable to VHS tapes, right? Like people make a movie or a TV show. In the olden days, they did it on film. Now they shoot it. Most of everything is done digitally now, where you just pretty much record light and sound onto a hard drive. And then for people to watch that before streaming, it's a lot of data, right? Like a movie, you know, if you were to take a perfect film movie that's, you know, let's say 2.5 hours long and convert it to digital so that you could put it on a, you know, hard drive or CD or DVD, you know, it would be 20 gigabytes of data, maybe 30, maybe even more than that. And originally, that was very expensive, right? Like 20 years ago, you couldn't go get a 20 gigabyte. Well, you could go get a 20 gigabyte hard drive, but it wouldn't be economical to do that for every movie or TV show that you wanted to watch. And they've got a lot better. And eventually they got down to DVDs, which are you know, originally CDs, which are 600 megabytes, which aren't quite a full movie, but you know, you can get a low quality movie on there. DVDs, I think, were maybe 2 gigs or 4 gigs that you could put in. 2 gigs of data that you could put in, and then Blu-rays are, I think they're up at like 10 or 20. So those are pretty close to what real film would be. And when Netflix started, as you know, they were just sending out DVDs. And that's how we used them originally as well. Like you order 3 DVDs, keep them as long as you want, and then send them back. And that put video stores straight out of business because video stores made their money off of late fees. So if you wanted to go rent a Blockbuster, you would rent it. And then if you would rent it for $2, and then every day that you didn't bring it back would be another dollar. So you could end up paying $50 for keeping a DVD or, you know, VHS tape for, let's say, a month. Netflix sort of flipped all that around and they said, we got plenty of DVDs. You keep it as long as you want, but you can only have 3 at a time. And you're going to pay for those 3, you know, month after month. And that really resonated with people because it meant there was less pressure to watch something. You didn't have to go to the video store, rent something on a Friday night, watch it, and then return it Saturday morning. Now you can get it, keep it around, you know, you keep it for 2 years if you want. You're still paying your monthly Netflix free fee. They don't care. But you've got a lot more freedom to watch, and it did really well. So just like you said, Netflix was really the first like big streaming platform, and they said, hey, if we can like email these DVD or not email snail mail out these DVDs, what if we just had a device that people could put in their living room and we could just stream the DVDs to them? And streaming means they're going to have the full file on their servers, which live in the cloud, and then when you want to watch it, it's going to send, you know, let's say 5 minutes worth of, I don't even think it's 5 minutes. I think it was more like 30 or 40 seconds worth of the movie to the device in your living room at a time. And, you know, the longer you watch it, the more they're going to send you. So at any given time, you don't have to store that complete movie. You just store, you know, the most recent and future 15 or 30 seconds, and everything else can just go away. So you could have a, you know, super inexpensive device in your living room that doesn't need, you know, gigabytes of storage. All it needs is enough storage to watch, to stream what the few moments that you're actually watching of the TV show or movie as it goes along. And I think it was Roku was the original device they put out there. And the interface was like pretty awful. Like you had to add the movies on the Netflix site and then you could watch them on the Roku device, which wasn't great. Eventually they really streamlined all of that, pun intended with streamlined, and you could add and remove movies just straight from the device. And then other companies started really liking that and got behind it as well. And they've sort of made Netflix, I won't say Netflix is obsolete now, but Netflix does not have a great choice, a great selection of movies, or at least not as good as it used to be. Because many of these rights holders, like let's say NBC, for example, used to be able to watch all of The Office on Netflix because nobody else was doing streaming. Then NBC said, hey, there's like thousands of people or millions of people watching our TV show on this Netflix thing that we gave away for pennies. We want that back, and we want people to pay us as NBC or us as Disney or us as HBO for these shows. We don't want to have a middleman for that. We want to be the direct person that consumers get their stuff from. And I think that's really what made the streaming services blow up so big, is now nobody wants to, everybody wants to make as much money off of their content as possible. And if you're paying a third party to host it for you and handle all of that, that's money that you're losing. Right. And as we've talked about, like, you know, technology only gets better and better. So creating your own digital streaming platform is, you know, 20 years ago, that would be impossible for a single person or small group of people to do. Now, I think you can buy it as a service. Like you can go to a streaming provider, maybe not Netflix, but, you know, some backend provider and say, hey, I want a streaming channel. And as long as you have rights to the things that you're going to be streaming on there, you could have your own streaming service. You could have, you know, Rochelle Newton's Diversity Chat streaming channel for, you know, not a ton of money, and people could just use that. And it's almost like a democratization of streaming services, which is for the most part good. But the bad side of that is, just like you pointed out, now we've got 30 different ways to watch something. We also have lots of streaming channels here, and I find myself sometimes I'll be like, oh, I was watching this show last night. Oh, I don't remember what streaming thing it was on. Was it Netflix? Was it Hulu? Was it Peacock? Was it Amazon streaming? Was it like, which one was it? And it's very hard as an end user to like go through all of that stuff now.
I have a question about that, because that's exactly the same problem I have. You know, I don't remember where I saw it, you know, and if you type it in search, you know, whatever the title of the program is, you get, you know, IMBD, you mm-hmm. get all these other things that tell you. And, you know, as a consumer, that's pretty, you know, complicated, because if you click on IMDb, for example, and usually it's the first one at the very top, if you type mm-hmm. in a pretty popular show, for example, if you type in, I don't know what's popular these days, but these documentaries that's around about LGBTQ people, mm-hmm. about, you know, Jewish people, Black people, all these documentaries. And right, so you type it in and it'll come up with all of these options and you aren't sure which one to click on. So my first question about that, and I know we have a couple, we haven't finished answering the first question I asked you, but you can't, you can, when you click on the thing, it says ways to watch, you can bookmark it, but that still doesn't mean you know where it is or who it is. Yeah. So why can't you, in your library of things that you save, say DVR or some other kind of process like that, save the movies that you've watched, mm-hmm. all the programs and things you've watched in a container or something that's associated with Rochelle? And so you click, when I go to say Netflix, here's all the movies you or programs you watched yep. this year, or, you know, whatever the time frame, however much space they have available to tell you your list of things. Because if you're like Drew, you watch all these things, you might have a long list. And the data file for you might be bigger than, say, the data file is for me. But why isn't that possible? Why can't you record, or why can't you save your activities in something like a DVR or the cloud mm-hmm. that's yours? So when you go to Netflix, it brings you all the things you watch in case you want to watch it again.
So I have a prediction that we will have that within the next 5 years, I think. Right now, you can't do right now, streaming providers, nobody wants to work with each other, right? So Amazon doesn't want to help Netflix understand their customer base. Amazon wants to understand their own customer base, and they want to advertise to them and help them out. So I think where it gets tricky is if you watch something on, let's say, Netflix, and also IMDb is owned by Amazon, by the way. So like everything that we look at on IMDb is probably being tied directly into your Amazon Prime account somewhere along the line. And it's really hard to like mix and match. Yeah. Yeah.
Pretty interesting.
What I use now is a tool called, there's a website called Letterboxd or Letterboxd. And it does a really good job of tracking your ratings. The problem is you have to like manually put that in for everything that you watch. And so like I sort of got in a habit of doing it. So I think that mine is pretty accurate, but it would be even better if I didn't have to do that. Like if there was a plugin within Netflix or within Hulu or within whatever that said, yeah, Drew just watched this. So mark that on his account as watched, so he don't have to worry about like, oh, I've already watched that. Like it doesn't need to come up. Like I know for me, like one of the Netflix sections that I like is they have like hidden gems for you, and it uses some like algorithm to like pick out movies that they think that you're going to like. And it is spot on for me most of the time. The problem is most of those movies I've seen, but I've not watched them on Netflix. I've watched them on some other platform, and Netflix doesn't know about that, which is giving me as like their user a bad experience. So I think there is some sort of like inclination of that for them to make that better. And it all may come down to AI, right? Amazon wants to know what movie, or Netflix wants to know what movies I've watched. And I'm probably okay with Netflix knowing what movies I've watched, but they have to like do that technical bit of glue to get it all together so that then Netflix can create a better experience for me, which then means I'm going to continue giving them money month after month. Which is, right. I mean, that's sort of the win-win, but I just don't think that we're there yet with not necessarily the technology, but maybe the business culture isn't there yet. Nobody wants to give away their information, even if it's, or nobody wants to give their competitors information about their users, even though it could be like good for them. But I hope that the tide is turning with that.
So let me ask you a question. There's this app called Rocket Money, I believe it is. It's Rocket something or another. And their claim to fame is they will delete subscriptions you don't know that you have.
Uh-huh.
And when I thought about that, initially I thought it was a great idea. This is great, you know, because, you know, like every once in a while I look at my Apple phone, I look at my iPhone and I look and it shows me my subscriptions. I didn't even know I had a subscription to that, you know. So I thought, well, this would be a great app. But then you have to give them your password, your username for every app mm-hmm. you want them to see. Because like, so for example, if you have a Hulu account, they want you to give them all the information about your Hulu account, like your username, your password, you know, all this stuff, how you do it, and your banking information even mm-hmm. to cancel your subscriptions. That makes me nervous. I mean, I think it's a great idea, but you know, for those of you who don't do much of this, I don't know if you remember QuickBooks, but back a few years ago, QuickBooks did the same thing. It managed all your money. It paid your bills for you. If you had to tell it all that, but you had to give mm-hmm. them access to your bank account and all that stuff. And then one day they were hacked.
Mm-hmm.
And the fear goes up exponentially because you don't know what that really means to you, because these people have your banking information. So now there's that. So in the world of streaming, one, how do you keep up with your subscription? I'm not going to even answer that question. I'm going to move on. I'm going to go back to my original question, because this will probably take us completely off track. So now that we talked about, we know what streaming is. So it's a series of manufacturers or vendors or whatever you want to call them who make entertainment services such as mm-hmm. movies and things like that, that anybody can have access to for a fee. Some of them start out free, but then after that, 3 or 4 months, you pay a fee, and then you pay a fee and it may go up. And there, you know, we always talk about that, but the terms of service, rarely do we read what those things say when we click on it to sign up. So how secure are streaming services, and how do you get out of a streaming service that you've had for a long time? Is it possible just you as a consumer can cancel your Netflix account?
Yep.
And I realize you can, but how is it a barrier to doing that, or is it fairly simple?
So for the first question, how secure? The streaming services are pretty secure. But that being said, like every other service, you always want to use a different password per
service.
So you don't want your Netflix password to be the same as your banking password. And you don't want your Netflix service to be the same as your Amazon password. And the reason behind that is eventually everything gets hacked. Like, it's just a matter of time before Netflix is hacked, if they haven't already been. Amazon, Google, yeah, everything. Everything's going to get hacked.
I heard Amazon had, but I heard Netflix had, you know. It's frightening, Drew. It really is frightening. So if it's secure, so in other words, I can go to and sign up for a Hulu account, agree to pay my monthly services. And so I want you to tell me about this. So I pay all of my digital services, if you will, through a series of brokers, if you will. So like PayPal or Apple Pay or whomever it is. So I pay those there, and they're taken out of a different bank account than is my normal life. So that if anything happens with that bank or that bank account, I won't lose very much because I only put in there the amount of money of those monthly service fees and may have a few dollars extra, but that's all I put in there. Do you is that a good idea? Is that a good practice? Or do you think you should do something different?
I think that's a good idea. What I would probably lean more towards is the disposable credit card number. I don't know if like process is the right word for that, but most credit card or most bank accounts now will let you create credit card numbers like on the fly.
Yep.
So you could have, you know, in your wallet or your purse, you have one credit card with one number and, you know, you use that in person at places. But most credit card places now will say, like, you can go onto their website and you could generate a card that, let's say, is just for Netflix, so that you give Netflix that credit card number. All of your transactions go through that. And if at some point you decide, like, I don't want Netflix anymore, you can cancel that temporary number and it will go away. That probably shouldn't be the first option. Like, you should probably try and cancel it. I'll say like the legitimate way first, but the problem there is like I'm not exactly sure if Netflix falls into this category, but we'll just use them as an example. Netflix is very easy to sign up for, right? They want you to sign up for their service like with as little information as possible outside of credit card, right? Pay us, you can watch Netflix. That's great. Canceling, on the other hand, is not as easy. Canceling, it may mean that you have to call somebody up at Netflix and have them pitch to you like why you should stay with Netflix for half an hour. And that sounds awful. Right. And that's where I think places like that Rocket Money are, I won't say they're worth it because I really would feel uncomfortable giving a company like that my banking information. But like at that point, you're paying Rocket Money or whatever this third party company is to go through the stress of unsigning you up.
Dealing with Netflix and the complications of that. And so most of the Netflix things are, I mean, most of the streaming services are monthly, but do they also require you to have a contract, like say for a year for Netflix or something, or a year for Hulu, or is it that it's just monthly? So any month you could just cancel?
Most things are monthly now, which is pretty good. Like there are occasional times where like they may have a prorated cost if you sign up for the entire year. You know, maybe it's $11 a month or $8 a month if you prepay for 12 months. And that's sort of a, you know, I would say in my perfect world, I would just be constantly adding and removing streaming services based on what the season was and what I was watching. In reality, I'm very lazy and don't want to go through all of that pain every time.
And that's what they're counting on. They're counting on your complacency to keep getting your money, even if you're not using the services, you know? And so that leads me to two questions. So moving a little bit away from streaming into things like what Hulu has live TV. I don't know who else has, I think YouTube has live TV. And they market those services. So in addition to your streaming, your YouTube streaming service, you then can go pay for a subscription for live TV and you can watch your local channels, you can watch sports, you can watch all those other things. And they too require you have some terms of service, right? So it's not like monthly, like what you just described for streaming services. They want you to have that service for a year or for some period of time. And lately, Verizon, Spectrum, all of them have been in the marketplace advertising their data network services. So in other words, they want you to come watch your cable with them. They want you to get their internet from them, their phone, and all those things. Mm-hmm. And while all of those things are great, they do leave opportunities for you to be more vulnerable, right? So if you take things like, okay, I watch local TV, you know, the news and things like that on local TV, sporting events on local TV. But thinking about the convenience of one bill, right? So mm-hmm. I don't have to pay for, you know, Netflix. I don't have to pay for Hulu. I can get all of that in my YouTube live TV streaming service package, right? Mm-hmm. Would you recommend our consumers do that? Or would you say the continued individual things, and even considering the piece of television of people who still watch TV? I know most that's becoming a dinosaur too. TV is going the way of the dinosaur. But if people were still in that space, would you recommend that they do something like that? Go with a Hulu live TV or YouTube or some other vendor live TV, or continue getting your services from like a cable company like AT&T or Spectrum?
You know, that's a really good question. And I think I would tend towards using the consolidated version with like a couple caveats. Like, luckily, we don't watch any sports in the Stinnett household, so we don't have to worry about sports as much. But I know that's like a big one, because who wants to watch a sports show like the day after it happens, right? Like, you want to watch that stuff live. Like, there's the day after it happens, no, it's useless by that point. So like, you really need it live. One thing
unless
that we
want the classic, you know, some classics you could watch over and over again, you know, instant classics. I'm
speak for yourself there, Rochelle. I don't want to watch a new one, much less an old one.
We're going to go to a sporting, we're going to a Durham's Bulls baseball game, Drew. We're going to do sporting things.
Well, at least they got like food and drinks and stuff. That's I'll go for that.
You have your movies up on your phone while the game is going on? No.
Yeah, absolutely. That would be the best of both worlds. But like what we do when we turned off our cable subscription, maybe like 5 or 6 years, maybe even longer than that. We haven't had like a cable subscription in a while. And one of the things that we weren't quite sure about was like local news, because we do like local news. And, you know, we'll watch that in the morning and in the evening. And like, there's not a great streaming option for that outside of paying for something like YouTube TV. So what we ended up doing was we just got a digital antenna. So, and like, I think all major cities now, all of the local channels broadcast in digital, which means you get like a really good picture quality for your, you know, big four channels like ABC, NBC, CBS, and Fox. along with, I think we get like PBS and a few like random channels as well. And while that was like a little bit of a pain to set up, the digital antenna was really cheap. Like, I think it was under $20 online, and it was pretty simple to set up. And that gave us our, you know, all the local channels that we wanted without having to pay a monthly fee to something like, you know, at YouTube TV. There was a company, I can't remember the name of the company, and I think they may be out of business now, but for a while there was a streaming company that would say, hey, we'll handle the antenna for you and we'll stream that to you. So you could pay, I think they were charging something like $2 a month. You would pay this company. They had antennas, you know, all over the country, and you would rent an antenna for your local channels for a really inexpensive price and then stream it like everything else. But they got in trouble with the FCC, I believe, because I don't think you're supposed to be able, the competitors argued that, you know, a corporation is not the same as a person running an antenna. And it all sounded like it came down to money, but I don't think that company ever went anywhere, unfortunately, but it would have been nice if they did. The downside to packaging everything together is that like a lot of the times you don't really know how much you're paying. Like, so if you say you're going to pay $90 for TV plus phone plus HBO Max to, you know, Spectrum, well, like how much of that is your TV and how much of it is your phone? And, you know, if you get rid of one of those, you may not see a huge savings. Like, they're still going to try and get as much money from you as they can. So you have to be really careful and just, I don't know. I mean, it's almost like case by case. And you got to say like, okay, I'm paying $90 for these three services together. How much would that be if I got them all separately? And most of the time, it'll probably be more expensive to get them separately, but it's something you'll have to evaluate and sort of keep an eye on, because, you know, it won't be like that all the time, unfortunately.
Yeah. I think that there's so much for consumers to think about in these marketplaces. And mm-hmm. we talked about this a while back, but like when they come onto the market, it's not like there's a consumer education center, right? You could go to and find out about these things. So, you know, to know, you know, if you got Netflix and Hulu argumentatively, do you need HBO Max or do you need Showtime or do you need some mm-hmm. of these others? And they're coming online like water. Like mm-hmm. channels, like MGM has a streaming service, you know? I mean, like, what are they offering? So is it a method to market their programming, the things that they developed, or is it just a money grab, you know? So like MGM Plus, mm-hmm. never heard of. I heard of MGM, but not MGM Plus. And something you might like, they did a remake of Anne, what's her last name? Interview with the Vampire. I can't think of her name right now.
Oh, yeah.
They did a series about it, right? And so the lead character out of her, Anne Rice, the lead character out of her book is Lestat. And so Lestat is still a white man. But the person that plays Louis is now a black man, and they're in mm-hmm. Louisiana. And it seems like a perfect setting, all things considered.
Mm-hmm.
So I apologize. But it seems like to me that these services that are coming online every day, do we need as many of them as they come online? And how do we, you know, I think you said this earlier that there possibly is going to be some thought about making it easier on the consumer to maybe have more combined services that are priced, obviously, but consider older consumers, right? So most of us grew up on traditional television, right? Watching mm-hmm. ABC, CBS, and NBC. And, you know, then CNN came online. You know, PBS has always been there. You know, so, but the limitation of channels, local channels were done to just, you know, ABC and NBC and CBS. And then you started getting more and more and more. And every single day, there's more and more and more asking mm-hmm. you to sign up for their services. And they show you a preview of a great program or a great movie and says, sign up. To me, that's risky for our consumers, is just to see an ad like that. And the ads that they're generating, some of the questions I have to ask you, we'll probably have to do this at another time. But, you know, is that part of marketing? You know, how do we, technology is such a wonderful thing. It's ubiquitous, mm-hmm. it's everywhere. How do we protect consumers from themselves in the use of technology? Because even for us, I mean, like you just talked about a digital antenna and letter D and all these things, you spent time investigating them. You just didn't go out and buy it. You know, you mm-hmm. want to find out that. So how do we keep our consumers' faith safe in the world of digital entertainment?
That's a really good question. And I think like it all sort of comes down to me is like the best security practices for anything. So like if you see, like say you're watching TV, you see a preview for Interview with a Vampire, looks great, and you want to, you know, order a month of streaming for that, which I mean, to me, that sounds like a very reasonable thing to do. What you have to keep in mind is that you want to keep it as secure as possible. So like we were saying, you don't want to use, when you're setting it up, you want to use a unique password. You don't want to use your Netflix password. You probably don't want to give it your banking information, and you may not even want to give it your credit card. Maybe you want to give it one of these disposable numbers or your PayPal account where you can, but PayPal is pretty good about having a way to like cancel those types of subscriptions without having to get hassled by, we'll say like MGM Plus in this specific example. But I think it's only going to get worse from here as far as spread of streaming services. Because the reason we have MGM Plus now is because the company MGM owns the rights to the Interview with the Vampire series, right? And so why would they, if they wanted to sell it to Netflix, they could, but they could also sell it directly to consumers and make even more money. So, you know, when you're looking at that on your, when they're looking at that on their corporate balance sheet, they probably want to do that makes them, you know, more bang for the buck. You know, if they can make an extra couple million or billion, I don't know how well those shows do, probably not billions, but they can make another $1 million from standing it up on their own. They're probably going to do it, even if it gets less viewers in the long run, because not everyone is going to sign up for it that has signed up for Netflix.
And the harassment of creating a, so let's just say you subscribe to MGM Plus just to watch Interview with the Vampire for 1 month. Mm-hmm. You cancel it. A few months later, they show I don't know, the remake of War Games, you know, I couldn't the entertainment go by without mentioning it. The remake of War Games, you have to sign up again, right? Yep. And you keep doing that. While that might be a money saver, you know, I think that it serves you well to create a spreadsheet, a sales spreadsheet, or somebody Google Sheet, somebody sheet, and put who the vendor is, the streaming service, mm-hmm. you know, how much you pay, you know, when you can end your subscription, if you have a contract or some kind of engagement. And for your own benefit, you know, to have some kind of information that either you can redact or hide your username and password mm-hmm. in that Excel spreadsheet or that Google Sheet, so that you have some way of knowing who you were as that. Because like my Adobe account is different from my Microsoft account, which is different from my Google account. I could keep going on and on and on.
Oh, yeah.
So keeping up with all of that at my age, I could not do it from my mind. You probably can tell as we listen to these chats that I'm becoming more and more forgetful, harder to find words that are pretty common to me. So imagine that's just in general interaction. Like I couldn't remember Anne Rice, and I think I have every book she ever wrote. So, but I couldn't remember that. But that said, you know, I know that's kind of arcane, right? So to create something on a document like that, a spreadsheet, but how do you suggest that, especially people who are more forgetful, maybe mm-hmm. aged a little bit, how do you suggest that they keep up with all their processes in the digital footprint? You know, so do we create a spreadsheet? You know, do we tell Siri, or, you know, let Siri do it, or whomever Amazon has, Alexa? You know, how does that work?
So I wouldn't, like, I think a spreadsheet is probably fine. The thing that worries me about a spreadsheet is that if your computer is ever hacked and someone gets access to that spreadsheet, like, that's everything, right? Like, they can copy that spreadsheet and now they've got access. Password managers.
Mac, everybody, just get a Mac, get an Apple computer. That probably will happen to you far less than if you have a Windows computer, and Microsoft or whoever owns Windows, if you're going to sue me. But I will just say my experiences are okay. I've had a Mac forever. And I mean, like, I have a few hiccups, but for the most part, I've been pretty secure on my Mac. And yeah. I do think that you said about security. So, you know, creating an encrypted password that only you know, and make it something you know, so that you encrypt your device, and then you're good to go, you know, in your.
Yep. One other thing, and this is something I was we were up at my parents over the weekend, and we were looking for a password, and they just have a notebook with all of their usernames and passwords written down in there. So when we were trying to log into something, you know, my mom was like, hang on 1 second, let me go get the password book. She went and got the notebook. She was like, okay, you're logging into this. The username is, you know, blah, and here's the unique password for it. And I mean, that works pretty well. And it's a physical notebook. So yes, like if, you know, someone robbed their house, they could get that notebook, but they don't have to worry about it, you know, being in a random computer file somewhere that can get stolen. So I've sort of come around to liking, and I think my wife does the same thing. She needed a password one day. She was out and she was like, oh, it's in this, you know, notebook on my desk. And sure enough, I was able to go in there and find it without having to, like, you know, go through her computer or find some weird file. It's just like, oh yeah, it's just sitting right here. Is it 100% secure? Like, no, because it's written down. But, right, yet. Exactly.
Well, Drew,
I mean, LastPass isn't secure. I would, when we started this podcast, I probably recommended LastPass a few times for storing this stuff. And sure enough, like, they got hacked and they were not following their own best security practices in a lot of ways. And it's like pretty bad. And now LastPass is not a company that you want to really be doing business with.
Right. And that's probably true of everything. There's some things that need a second glance, right? We mm-hmm. we know that a password manager is a good thing to have, but, you know, a digital password manager, you risk, whereas a book, you know, especially if you make it in something that you don't write the word password on the outside of the book or something, you know, something, yeah. you know, in the event that your house is
robbed. Top secret account.
Exactly. Yeah, don't do that. You know, put in their cooking recipes. Most people don't care about that, you know, or something. Yeah. You know, if you must label it, but in reality, you know, probably all of us in our lifetime between now and forever, you're going to experience a data breach. There's mm-hmm. nothing you could do about it, because although these companies have best practices and all the policies they set in place, there's no way to make anything completely safe. No matter mm-hmm. how many layers of security you lay on top of it, no matter how many best practices you have, somebody who really wants it, they're going to get it. You know, I told one of the credit unions, all of their accounts have the first 8 numbers exactly the same. Exactly. Given an automated process that's just searching, think of how hard it will be for it to get the next 8 numbers. You know, so when you think about these things, I think the best practices are to always be safe as best as you can. Don't do it just because someone told you to do it. So you're looking at TV and Netflix says, sign up for a Netflix account. Do you need it? What are you risking to have it? You already are giving away so much of your data in social media. And Drew, I can't wait for us to talk about social media 2.0, whatever that might be.
Oh, yeah.
You know, NFTs and blockchain, you know, all of these things are out there. And I would just say, be extremely cautious if you're trespassing. And I use that word intentionally online, because you are trespassing on somebody else's thing and they're getting something for you that you don't even know.
Yes, absolutely. And I think we're about at time. I feel like maybe we should do a part two for this one, because
I didn't get to all your questions.
Yeah. So thank you, everybody, for listening. We'll be back with part two to this conversation either next week or very soon. I hope that everyone enjoyed our last episode where we just did some more discussions on AI. And we'll be having some more conversations about all this stuff very soon. So thank you all for listening, and we will talk to you soon.